Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail where you can, in turn, inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. Well, I am your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. You know, we had to stop Aaron Burrows last week in the middle of his story, and we want to finish that story. So we're going to finish it today. Here is the rest of the story. All right, so we're back. And listen, I got a bone to pick with you a little bit here. You're a trail runner. That's what you prefer, is to run on the trails.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I run on the trails just because it makes me better. It helps me, makes me engage my core in things. But I hate running on the trails. I love running on the roads.
Well, I'm glad that you said it makes you better, because I've tried to tell people that. And when I was running like I was running, people wanted to know what was my workout. I told them I'd trail run. And they was like, do you do anything else? I said, no, the trails will make you do it all.
It does. It does.
And it's a fact. That's what I would tell them.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm like, you're going to use even your eyelid muscles on the trail.
It is true. I force myself. If you go on my Strava, you'll notice that every once in a while, it'll be like obligatory trail run. My once a week trail. It'll be titled something like that, because every week I try to get on the trail one day a week. Just to make sure.
Make sure you get it in.
Yeah.
Well, I'm proud of you.
Well, thank you. So you mentioned your running career prior to all of this, but the way you came to start running was definitely not a normal thing as far as the way people normally start running.
No.
So tell that story about how you began running.
Well, my doctor told me I need to lose 40 pounds or it was going to lose me. I told him I was too busy. I had kids, you know, I'd work, you know. I'm like, man, I ain't got time to work out. You know, life is lifing. And he said, well, how much time you going to have when you're dead? And I said, well, you got a point there. And then I had my comeback. I said, well, how much weight will I lose once I die? Then he had his comeback. He said, how soon do you want to die?
Oh,
I say, you got a point. And so I didn't have any more comebacks after that.
Yeah.
So I started, you know, I played football. I was a quarterback. I played basketball. So I understood what working out was. But man, I tell you, as a 40-year-old adult, man, you don't have the motivation to do any of that.
Nor do you have the same body.
No, you don't. And especially when your body got, an extra 250 pounds since you were back in high school on it.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there figuring out, what am I going to do? So I end up moving closer to my job, which I was like almost 18 miles away. So I moved closer, and I intentionally moved 2 miles away. So I would have to walk. That was a 30-minute walk to work, 30-minute walk home. Oh. And I started like that. I started walking. And then that, not only that, but then when I went walking, I started just doing 15-minute intervals. And then I started running, walking. But the main part of the running started one day. I was coming home from church, and a friend of mine was dropping me off, and it was raining. And I said, man, I ain't ran since football practice. I said, I'm gonna go running, like literally running.
Yeah.
So I got home, changed out of my Sunday best, threw on some gear, and I went and ran for 3 miles. And it was, let me tell you something, when it rains in Houston, it clears out all the junk in the air.
Yeah.
So the air is like Colorado's air, just filtered.
Yeah.
And so the humidity is not there, and it feels cool, and you can breathe. And so I'm just like, if you've never been to Houston, it's like take a wet rag and soaking wet and breathe through it. Yep. Put it to your face and breathe through it. Yep. That's like breathing through the humidity in Houston. So I went and did that, man, and it felt so good. And then I ended up hurting the days after.
I bet you did.
Sunday. And I was working with the youth at church, and one of the youth guys that ran cross country back then, he said, "Man, what's wrong with you?" I said, "I went running." He started laughing at me. He said, "What'd you do?" And I told him. And he said, "Well, do you think you can do that every day?" I'm like, "Man, please." He said, "Well, how many miles do you think you can run a day?" He said, "Do you one?" I said, "I probably could do one, maybe two." He said, "Do two?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Okay, do two every day, starting Monday. And then next Sunday, we'll talk." And I said, "Okay." I said, "Cool." So, you know, I'm discipling him to run for Christ. I said, "I'm going to let this young man disciple me on running."
Yeah.
So he ends up helping me. And I come back the next week. He said, "How you feel?" "Worse." Because I did more of what I did to hurt the first time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He's like, "Well, do you think you can do 3 miles now?" And I was like, "Nah." He said, "Okay, do two again." So we did another week of two. And then I did a week of three. And then when I did the three, he said, "Mix it up." He said, "You could do a mile in the morning, a mile in the afternoon, a mile at night, or do a mile and a half in the morning, mile and a half at night, or do 2 miles and one, or one and two."
Yeah.
He said, "Just mix it up as long as you get it done every day." And so I ended up doing that. Did that for a couple of weeks, end up going to the hospital because I was in so much pain.
Yeah, just for those listening, this is not the way we advocate you start running. So go ahead.
So my doctor was like, "What have you been doing?" And I said, "Running." He busted out laughing. He said, "Man," he said, "keep up the good work." He said, "Take some ibuprofen, soak in some ice, drop them around your knees." He said, I guarantee you. He said, "If you keep it up," he said, "in another month or two, you're going to be just fine."
Yeah. And you were. Right?
I was. Yeah. I was just fine. And so I got up to 5 miles to seven and just never stopped.
And just kept going. Now you've done 100 milers and several ultra marathons.
Well, I tried 100 miler after the shooting. I'm doing one because I want to finish it, but I've done 50 milers.
Okay.
And 100 Ks.
Okay.
Yeah. The 100 mile, I went to do the Burning River in Ohio.
Yeah.
And that was after the shooting. And, oh, such a beautiful run. I'm in love with that run. And I only ran 20 miles of it.
Wow.
So I get to the aid station, or the first major stop at 20 miles. And I go up there, and the lady looks at me and she says, "You look like death." And my PTSD had kicked in, anxiety. I was having an episode, and I just had to stop.
Wow. Well, along the way, once you started running, you lost all this weight. You said you lost 100 pounds that first week.
The first year.
And then you kept losing weight for another couple of years after that. There's a lot of people out there that listen to this who struggle with weight, and there's a lot of people who want to find shortcuts to weight too. You know, we got Ozempic out there now. That's everybody's dream, is to take a pill and lose weight, which is not the healthy way to do it.
No.
Now, what advice do you have to those folks out there that need to lose some weight, from a guy who lost almost 200 pounds?
Trail run. I tell people that all the time. They laugh at me.
Yeah.
I say, I'm serious. I was trail running.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Even if you go find a trail and you walk it, it's a technical trail where you have to literally climb up the hills and the different stuff. You're going to be using the muscles in your body.
Yeah.
That's. And then on top of that, I started eating to fuel my passion.
Yeah.
Instead of eating to my emotional eating
Yeah.
that I used to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I made it a lifestyle. You know, I changed. I walked to work, and then I would eventually a friend of mine gave me a bike and I would bike to work. And then eventually I started biking to Bible study. I started biking to church. I don't recommend it in Houston. It's no longer a bike friendly town. The bike lanes and stuff like that. But there are some communities around the U.S. and the globe that I've been in, and biking is huge.
Yeah.
And so take those extra steps. Instead of running down to the corner store in your car, walk down there.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's going to take you a little extra time, but so is getting healthy.
Yeah. Take the stairs instead of the elevator.
Take the stairs, like my doctor tell me. Take the stairs instead of the elevator if you're not in a hurry.
Yeah.
When the elevators go out, if you live in a community like I used to live in, when the elevators went out, you had to take them anyway. And the things would seem like they were out every other weekend.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So, and then on top of that, I would definitely say get emotionally healthy, especially for us as believers.
Yeah.
You know, get the discipleship in. Because the more you, the higher view I have of God, the more I want to keep my temple right.
Yeah. Good way to put it.
It's not only the things I don't need to do, but it's also the things that I need to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. I like the way you put that. It just hit me that Houston, of course, I've been in Houston in the middle of summer. My wife and I used to travel during the summer every year in June, and I was out there, and I remember going for a run when it was just brutally hot. But the last time I was in Houston was, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago. I went out there to run an indoor track meet, and I that day, me and three other guys set the national record for the 4x800-meter relay.
Sweet.
Yeah. So I think, as far as I know, we still hold the record. It's 9:52 for three guys between the ages of 55 and 59. So, yeah, that was the awesome. Last time I was in Houston was
Have to find a picture of y'all so I can get it autographed. Put it in my collection.
I don't know about that. Again, you took some of this time off. You got back to run, and you came up with this crazy idea to run 50 marathons in 50 weeks and 50 different states. And how did all that come to fruition? Which, by the way, let me say this. Let me plug this book. This is the book. If you're watching this and not listening, this is the book. It's called Middle Monday, My Quest to Run 50 Marathons in 50 States in 50 Weeks After Being Shot 5 times. Around the age 50 too, right?
Yeah, it was actually supposed to be before, but this small thing happened called COVID, shut the world down.
Yeah.
And so it actually was for my 50th birthday that I ended up doing it.
Yeah. Well, and we'll get into all of that. But I'll just say I read the entire book in 2 days. It's engaging. And but it's very raw. It's very, very raw. I mean, this is all your feelings and everything about everything that went on during that time, including issues with hotels and, I mean, just all sorts of crazy stuff that happened during this quest, in addition to all the highlights as well and the good things that happened. And so anyway, that's the book. So how did you come up with this idea?
So after the third attempt on my life, after the workplace shooting, I ended up going around a corner to a Starbucks. It's one that's closed since this happened. And one of the police officers that I know from my area of town was there. And when he seen me, he knew something was wrong. And I told him, I said, they tried to kill me again. And he was like, you know, let me finish this report that I'm doing with this lady and I'm gonna be right with you. And so he finished the report with the lady, and I had told him I was going to call the police to report what happened. But since he was there and he knows me and he knew of what happened at my company, he was like just perturbed that like nothing has happened and these guys are still doing this. So he opens up his laptop and he I guess, logs in and he pulls up my information and I see him reading. He's reading down like this and he says, nothing. He shuts his laptop, doesn't even look at me, gets up, leaves, get in his cruiser and drives off.
Oh my goodness. That's weird.
Without saying anything to me. And then later I would see him probably a month later and he wouldn't even acknowledge me.
Well, that's weird.
And so I had another friend of mine that week call me and he said, I've been concerned about you. He said, I asked a friend of mine that is pretty high up in the chain of command in the Houston Police Department about your case to look into it because you're a personal friend of mine and I'm concerned about you. And he said that his friend told him that my file is restricted. And that it takes the higher ups, the brass in the mayor's office in order to view it.
Yeah.
And he told my friend, he said, I don't know what your friend was into, but it's something serious.
Yeah. Wow.
I wasn't into anything. I was at work. I was minding my own business.
Yeah. But had the wrong, just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah. So, so I realized at that moment in time that there was nobody to help me.
Yeah.
The company was slandering me. They did a smear campaign on me. I had people trying to kill me. The police wouldn't do anything. The DA's office said they didn't get anything from the police, so they couldn't do anything. And so I was like, I got to do something to get my life back. Or I'm just going to lay here and die from a depression and sadness.
Yeah.
So I began to work with my psychologist and psychiatrist and came up with this idea. And they were like, well, what is it that's going to get you to start trying to live? I said, running. And they were like, yeah, we know that.
Yeah.
I said, I got to do something with running. And then, Steve and his wife, with the 50 State Run Club, you know, they're from Conroe up in Texas.
Okay.
So I knew them and I knew about the Run Club because I met them out at runs.
Yeah.
And I said, well, they got this 50 State thing. And then I said, well, I can put something together where I can travel to all the states that have forced me to have to get out.
Yeah.
Because I was living in Starbucks and I would try to go home to sleep. But I was like living in Starbucks.
So you needed something to get you out and about, and around people.
And interact with people. Yeah. And so I said that this would be good because that would get me out. And my motivation is to do a fundraiser for St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital.
Okay.
So I wanted to do 50 states, 50 weeks, 50 marathons, and try to raise $50,000 for St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital.
That's great. That's great. And St. Jude's is the biggest company here locally. It's called Shaw Industries. They're in the flooring business. Mm-hmm. And they send a huge contingent of people to the St. Jude Marathon in Memphis every year because it's just near and dear to the heart. So we hear about St. Jude a lot here in Dalton. Well, that's cool. So how do you go about planning something like that? I mean, how do you go about planning? And let me say this before we get started into that. You decided to do this at the worst possible time because we're going through – it's 2021, and it's like every other race is canceling and shutting down. A lot of times they have them on the schedule because nobody knows what's going on and what they can and can't do. And so there are races that go on, and then there's other races that they've – have some pressure that's put on them to close races down and they wind up closing races down. And so you're dealing with this the whole time. How do you deal with all of that?
So when I started to do it in 2019, 2020. I'm sorry. That's when like it was really starting to. Yeah. So I had planned it and had races. I was going to start in Houston with the Chevron Marathon. They end up shutting down a couple of weeks before. And I said, well, that's okay. The Louisiana Marathon is a great marathon. And I always wanted to do it, but it's on the same day of Chevron. So now I'll go do that one.
Sure.
Well, guess what? That one shut down. And like you said, they just one after the other like a domino.
Yeah.
So once they restricted air travel and shut down air travel, well, that shut everything down for me. So I had to wait until everything opened back up.
Yeah.
Now, once they allowed us to start traveling again, I just started back with saying, okay, I can do Chevron if they're going to have it. Chevron said, no, they're not going to do it. They're just going to wait because it was going to be their 50th year. So they took the time to plan something and just not do a
race.
They
wanted something bigger for their 50th year.
And so I was like, cool, then I'll do that as my last race. So I just went over to the Louisiana. And Louisiana was still a go until they shut down. Then they shut down and I was scrambling and I found a little gem of a run. The Fuski Island Marathon. Over off of Hilton Head, South Carolina.
Yeah.
It's the third weekend of January.
Yeah.
And we all know how races lie to us and say that they're fast and flat. But I promise you, this race has dimples. There's not a hill or anything, no climb, no nothing. It is fast, flat. It's laid out symmetrically so you can compartmentalize your run.
Yeah.
And it goes around the whole island. It's beautiful. And I mean, you'll finish. It is a beautiful run. I advise anybody to do it. But I found them. And so I started with them. Then I realized I had to have a plan A, B, and C.
Yeah.
And it was not on. And this is my first time doing something like this.
Sure.
And so not only was I doing that for the races, but I showed up to the run short, run long, run very long ultra that's up in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And so I got a reservation for a hotel there at the Aloft Hotel. I get there. And guess who's overbooked? I'm like, who's overbooked for COVID? What's really going on?
And they didn't have a room for you.
Didn't have a room for me. And the guy said, well, I have one more room left. If you would have got here before the last guy, I could have gave that to you. That's really going to comfort me. And so I'm like, well, you know, I got to be at this race at 5 a.m. It's only like 5 hours. I said, you know, I just... you know, go chill over here in the lobby. Oh, we can't have you chill in the lobby. And I'm looking at this place. It's huge.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, nobody else has any other place in town. Oh, I know everybody's sold out.
Yeah.
I said, but we can't have you chill in the lobby. I said, I'm here for the race. I know everybody's here for the race. It's like, so what am I going to do? I don't know what you can do. I guess you can put your car up under in a garage and sleep in your car. Man, it is 22 degrees out there.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I was like, you know what? If I'm going to die, at least I'm going to be at the race and die.
Yeah.
So I drove. I found the race, the entrance where everybody had to come in.
Yeah.
They actually had a bar there. And so it had to be opened up for people to come in. I pulled to the side so that I would, one, hear everybody coming in and wake up. Two, that if I die, at least somebody would find me. And now, I kid you not, this is how desperate I was.
Oh, my goodness.
I was desperate.
I bet. I'm sure. I've actually been there before.
Yeah.
I got to a hotel one time with a whole team full of runners. I had a women's college team. We got to a hotel in Atlanta. And they said they didn't have rooms for us, and they were booked. I was like, you got to be kidding me. What, I mean, here's my reservation. You know, I made this, you know, however long ago it was. And they're like, yeah, I'm sorry. Can't do anything for you.
Yeah.
We got a sister property, you know, somewhere else, and we'll see if they can put you up. Well, we get over there anyway. It was, yeah. It happens. But I'm glad you didn't die.
I didn't die.
You made it through the night.
I did the run, and I was only able to do half of the marathon.
Yeah.
But that was a beautiful run. It did have a hill from hell. But other than that, greatly supported, beautiful run, beautiful scenery. And you go by this water treatment plant where they have these burners out on the backside. So like it's cold. It's during the wintertime. So it's pretty cool out there. Great for running. But if you want to warm up, then you stop along that backside by that water treatment plant where that fire is roaring.
And you can feel
it. Man, you can feel it. And you just, you thaw out and it's great. It's great.
That's good stuff.
That's what I ended up doing. I also had to bounce around with planes.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Trains.
Yeah, because all of that stuff was buses, was up in the air.
Automobiles.
Yeah.
Everything. I mean...
But you were determined. So I remember, do you know who Dean Karnazes is?
Yes.
Okay. So Dean Karnazes, you know, he ran 50 marathons in 50 days in 50 states. And, but of course he couldn't run races.
Yes.
In all those states, because you don't have races on Wednesdays. And so a lot of those runs were, they might've been a marathon course,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't an actual marathon. But you were determined that you were going to run actual races. You weren't going to go somewhere and go to a state and just run 26.2 miles.
And some people said, well, why did you even leave home? You could have did that over at Terry Hershey Park, you know? Yeah, but I wouldn't have been can you imagine trying to be motivated to get up when I'm not? Like, if I go get up, okay, this day I'm at the airport, I get on a plane, the likelihood of me not doing something has just increased.
Yeah.
And so that was important for me. The other thing about running races is not only being around people, but I also wanted to try to literally raise money for St. Jude, which is whether it was money directly given to me or me just, I talked to so many people who during that time had stopped giving to charities because they didn't know what the future held.
Yeah.
They didn't know what the future held. So I talked to people, man, and I would be talking to people and crying. People would be crying.
Wow.
And it was an emotional thing for me. Like my niece, Gabby, she ended up getting diagnosed with cancer like 2 weeks before I started my run. And I was just like, wow, you know, God, can you make this any more personal?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and thank God now she's fine.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So they removed the cancer sac from her kidney and the brain tumors, but she had stage 4 and,
wow.
You know, they were like, hey, this is going to be it. You know,
yeah, you don't usually recover from that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And one day she woke up, pulled the tubes out and the IV out of her arm and was just had a bunch of joy.
God used that situation to motivate you during this quest that you had.
Yeah. I was in a lot of pain. And so I would think about, I originally started the St. Jude part because of this kid named Aiden.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. I had a lot of friends at the Chicago Marathon that was using the hashtag I run for Aiden. And so I met Aiden and his dad and family, not personally. I didn't get a chance to like walk up to them, but I seen them.
Yeah.
And so I just observed and I was like, you know, that's what I'm going to do. If I'm going to get hope back in humanity, it's going to have to be through the kids or the elderly.
Yeah.
You know, because everybody else, include me, we screwed. You know, it's like we so far messed up. There's just no hope. There's always hope because there's Christ. And that's really what kept me through all of this.
Right.
But it was the small tokens. I started off with Aiden to even plan it and go that way. But even during that time with my niece, it was even more personal to, you know, stick with it. I know you had to put it off, progressive muscle weakness. So when I actually started the running, I was in a lot more pain because my muscle had gotten weaker over that year and a half. And so I remember I ran a run out in Medford, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
It's a trails to rail run. Yeah. Very, very beautiful.
Yeah.
They bus you out if you're going to do the half and you just run back in. If you do the full, you start at the front and you run and come back, which is great because you're passing people up the whole time.
Yeah.
So it's never a boring run per se.
Yeah.
Very picturesque. But I remember starting on that course, and by mile two, I was ready to punch my mama in the throat.
Yeah.
I was in so much pain.
Right.
And I got to mile four and I was like, people were checking on me and I'm like, I can't do this. And then I thought about Aiden and I thought about my niece, Gabby, my great niece, I should say, Gabby. And I was like, they don't have a choice.
Yeah, it's true. So true.
They don't have a choice.
Wow.
And so at that point in time, I committed that if nothing else, I would at least run half, at least get to a half.
Yeah.
The number where the pain becomes like unbearable for me is at mile 10.
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems to be between 10 and 15 miles most of the time. Yeah.
Yeah. During in the book, it was 10 and 15.
Yeah.
But it kicks in at 10.
Yeah.
I don't care if I walk 10 or if I'm running it at 10. That seems to be the number where it says, okay, we got the motor running. Let's cut the pain level up.
Yeah.
And so... Well, I continue to...
And a lot of this pain, just to point out, a lot of this pain goes back to this bullet that you still have lodged in you.
Yes.
And that's kind of where a lot of this stuff originates, right?
So, yeah, my the scar tissue that I have from back there, because three bullets entered in on that side. So I have the scar tissue from there. One bullet was removed, which was pretty easy because it was in the soft tissue area still. But the other one is down in the muscle itself.
Yeah.
And that has caused the most pain. And that's where the muscle weakness comes in from.
Yeah.
And it causes other problems with the gluteus medius and minimus. And then the hip flexor, my T-bands.
It's all connected.
Yep. And it just goes downhill from there.
Literally. It hurts particularly to run uphill.
Yes.
But it also hurts if you're in that constant flat ground also, but yeah. you feel okay running downhill.
Oh man, give me a downhill race that's really downhill, 26.2 miles. I can run the whole thing because it's on my quads. It has nothing to do with my glutes.
So your quads can handle all you can give them.
Can handle it all. But the flat, I'd rather do uphill than run flat for a long time.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because even the uphill gives your my quads. Glutes. Yeah.
Well, it also works your quads too.
Yeah,
though,
it works more than the quads.
Yeah.
But the flat is like a steady beating of the quad.
Yeah.
And it hurts so bad. But wow. Somebody asked me about the bullet being in there, which was crazy because when I went to the doctor and he told me I had had a surgery and everything, 2 weeks after the shooting, I still went and ran my benchmark run, the 50 miler. And I had asked the doctor, I said, hey, I got a race coming up next weekend. Can I run? And he said, what kind of race? I said, I have a ultra marathon, a benchmark run I'm trying to do. And I said, it's a 50 miler. And he looked at me, he said, a 50 what? I said, it's a 50 miler. And he told me, he said, yeah, you can run. He said, you're going to be, it just depends on how much pain you want to be in.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I got a high threshold of pain. I said, so I think I'll be okay. Man, please. At 40 miles, around 32, 35 miles, it was taking its toll on me. I mean, I was falling flat on my face on a flat course.
Yeah.
To where this paramedic that was running with me, he was like, man, something's wrong with you. What's happening? And then at mile 40, I had vertigo from the stress. My PTSD had kicked in. This is like right after everything. So I don't know all this stuff about PTSD.
Right.
I had not even seen a psychologist or psychiatrist because I was fighting to get the bullet removed and to be able to see somebody.
Yeah.
It was a battle the whole time. So he told me it's up to you. And so I did that. But then when I went on this quest, in my mind, I'm like, okay, I'm going to finish in 5 hours and 5 minutes, because before that, I would pace marathons 255 to 410. So I'm thinking to myself, I'm not going to push myself. I'm going to do 5 hours, 5 minutes and 50 seconds for my 50th and then a 50-50, and I'm going to just a 50, and I'm going to take 50 Cent's name, and I'm going to start calling myself the brand new 50. And so I'm just going to celebrate this stuff, and I'm telling you, the pain was crazy. And I told somebody, I said, had I known how much pain I was going to be in, I said, I wouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
But let me clarify this. The pain I was in mentally, emotionally, and fighting to live life again was greater than that physical pain.
Yeah.
And that's what drove me. That's what kept me. And then on top of that, I came across the Baltimore Running Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And I contacted them about doing their King Crab Challenge. And man, those people over there at Corrigan Sports, I love them. I love y'all. Return my call, please. But I love Corrigan Sports because they were so supportive. They treated me like royalty. With my story, they hooked me up with the news people up there in Baltimore to tell my story. I ended up, they sent out messages on their news boards to different media. And the Pittsburgh Marathon, which I ended up having to cancel, they did something on me, and that was beautiful. And then I ended up going to New York. And New York, like, did it big for 3 years straight with me. And I was I recognized that the more I kept telling my story, the less drama I was having in Houston with people trying to kill me and the police.
Yeah.
And so people were leaving me alone, because I literally was at first was telling people, family, friends, anybody that would listen, if I die all of a sudden, if something happens, it's suspicious circumstances, it's the company, the cops, and the criminals. I'm like, that's it, because they all know each other.
Yeah.
They know who the guys were. The company knew who they were. The cops know who they are. There was not an issue about IDing these people.
Yeah.
Hear what I say. This wasn't a random act of violence. You know,
the fact you were there was random.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I stopped something that they were doing, and somebody knows something.
Yeah.
And so I ganged in that a little bit quicker. And after what the company did to me, interjecting in my personal life, caused me problems with visitation of my daughter. I didn't see my daughter for 5 years. Our relationship still has not recovered from that. My baby girl. And there's no explaining. It was when she was 13, she was going through high school. She's like, Dad, you wasn't there for me. I'm like, I was there for you. I was being kept from you.
Yeah.
You know, and she doesn't, she just don't want to hear about her mom and what her mom possibly could have done. But it's like, it's all public record, you know? And it's like, I did not do this on my own. And so what the company did with that and some other stuff, and then the police, I was like, as I began to tell more and more and saying this stuff publicly, they backed off of me.
Yeah.
And so that was another reason why I kept going. So New York was very helpful, because they did the thing with Runner's World.
Yeah.
They got me on there. They got me on the all kind of news in New York, international.
Mm-hmm.
in Houston, I did an interview with a lady for the Houston Chronicle, and she was like, wow. I mean, we did it over the phone. I could hear her draw drop. And she was like, I wasn't expecting this. And she was like, this is going to be awesome. Well, then she calls me back and says that the editor won't run the story.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was just like, yeah, I don't think so. And, you know, it's just Houston. Yeah. That's what it is. And so, I mean, it was very difficult, but I would fight through the pain. I would speak. I did the St. Jude marathon. I ended up only doing a half, and I was running there, and I was just so happy to be there and see they didn't have all the kids out because of COVID, but some of them were out, and just to see the few that was.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
I'm sure.
I couldn't do the hospital tour like I wanted to because of the COVID situation.
Yeah.
But as I was running, they got this one section around mile 9, I think it is. And it's the party block. It's a whole block of homes where they had this super party. And it's like, that's not a place you just want to stop running, but it's a place that you do want to stop running.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they're so fun. But there was a guy from Fox there. That was filming, and as I was running, he came right up to me. He's like, man, why you got a smile on your face? You know, you had mile 11 or something like that. And I was like, man, I said, you have no idea. He said, you got time to talk to me? I said, sure. And so I shared the story with him, and then they end up getting on CNN from there. And so a lot of people heard the story. And so as I was finishing up my races, I would go to races and people would be like, oh, you were on the news. You were this and that. And they would come run with me for a couple of miles and hear my story, hear the testimony, ask questions. And then it became, okay, now I'm reconnecting to people. You know, I got the passion, the purpose to gain back humanity, hope and humanity. I'm connecting with people that are passionate. And then there became total strangers that started supporting me.
Yeah.
Because people are like, how are you paying for all this? I'm like, huh. You know, I'm like, thank God for COVID, because tickets were like, I was getting tickets for like $29 round trip.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who can plan something like this but a sovereign God?
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, really?
What a way to look at it.
Yeah. And so it was like, I think all my tickets, if you don't include Alaska, which I didn't make it to, but I had got the ticket, and you don't include Hawaii, which I didn't make it to, but I did get the ticket. No, I did Hawaii.
Yeah, you went to Hawaii. Yeah,
I did Hawaii. But if you don't, just those two right there is $1,000.
Yeah.
All the rest of the states, and I didn't make it to four, all the rest of them, the other 46 was less than $1,000.
Oh, it's crazy.
Because I was getting tickets round trip for $29, $39, $49.
That's crazy. Yeah, that was amazing that it happened during that. Yeah, I was thinking about the downside of the logistics and stuff, but there was a positive side of doing it that year as well.
There was some downsides. Well, when you go to catch a plane and there's no plane, no crew, and nobody in the airport representing the company.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, they didn't have any flights, so didn't nobody come to work. Nobody came to work. It's like crazy. Some places like Kansas, you only got America and United flying in there.
Yeah. That sounds like Chattanooga.
Yeah.
Well, Chattanooga's got American and Delta.
Okay.
And a couple of United flights, but not many.
All right.
Yeah. So what was the craziest thing you think that happened to you over this year?
Oh, I think the craziest thing was in the Pine Line Marathon in Medford, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is not only was I in great pain, but at mile 9, they were having what they call it a trap house. Now, I'm from the dirty South. They got a whole different meeting down in the South and pretty much around the country. But they said they were having a trap house what it was is they were having a gun exhibition and they were shooting off weapons.
Yeah.
And they were, I would say, a little less than a mile away from us.
Yeah.
And I ended up having to cut my camera on and look at myself, talk to myself in the camera, because it was just very, very difficult.
I'm sure.
I was like, my trigger is going to be terrible later.
Just hearing bullet shots now or is this different than it was prior
to? Well, not just that, but they were firing some big rounds.
Yeah.
To where you could feel the recoil. You could feel the vibration.
Yeah.
Of what they were firing. And it was not only I was out there from what I went through, but you had some vets that were out there.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And you could tell myself and you could tell the vets. But you could tell how serious it was from the people that wasn't used to that.
Yeah.
You had people out there that literally was saying, I felt like I was being shot.
Yeah,
I felt like I was going to be killed. I was so afraid.
That's crazy.
And so you had to run through that and then turn around at mile 13 and come back. Come back through it. Mm. And so that 4 miles was it 4 or 9? You know, I always get messed up at 9 miles.
Yeah.
9. So we look at 9, 10, 11, 12.
Yeah.
Yeah, 13 miles. So 4 miles. Those 4 miles was just very, very, very difficult, crazy. That was the most craziest thing. That's I found myself. So I get there. I'm already fighting through this pain saying, you know, I'm keeping Gabby and Aiden on my mind. But then at mile 9 to the turnaround for this to happen. And I literally at the turnaround was thinking to myself, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. And then I got up to where the aid table was and I looked at the guy and they looked at me and they didn't say it, but it was the fact that they didn't say anything.
Yeah.
I know I didn't need to go on.
They could tell you needed to call it a day.
Yeah. I'm about to get teary eyed right now because you're at the turnaround, you're cheering people on, go finish strong. This sure. But they're seeing what this is doing to people.
Yeah.
Now, not the racist fault, because it's COVID time.
Well, and it's coincidence that that just happens to happen at the same time.
Yeah. They wouldn't have been having this race at that time had it not been for COVID. It would have been at its regular time. And then those people wouldn't have been out having their event.
Yeah.
Had it not been for COVID, it would have been at their regular time. And so it just so happened in this park that everybody's trying to do everything for their clubs and everything at the same time.
Yeah.
And so I tell them, I said, somebody got to come pick me up. I'm not going to make it back in.
Yeah.
And so a guy, he comes and he picks me up. The race apologizes. They did a wonderful job. They give you a great hoodie, great bling.
Oh, wow.
What was crazy about the race, though, is the year before, the lady was like, we had a record crowd of 200 people.
Yeah.
You know, of this race. And that year that we did it, they had over 2,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
My
goodness. And so I was like, well, I hope people keep going to that race.
Yeah.
Because it was a great race.
Yeah.
But I found so many little gems that had it not been for COVID, I wouldn't have sought these races out.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have researched. I wouldn't have been online asking people, hey, what's over in this area? What's over in that community?
Yeah.
Because a lot of them, they don't have a big advertising budget. They're not,
that's right.
You know, they're not blasting it everywhere.
And those are some of the most fun ones are the ones you just drop in on that they don't even expect you.
That they don't even expect you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Which race or state was your favorite of the ones that you were able to get to?
So I would say that when you talk about state, I would definitely have to do the South Carolina as far as the state, the Dafuski Island.
Yeah.
It was my birthday. It was literally the day of my birthday, the race was.
That's cool.
And so when I got off of the ferry and came across, all the volunteers were up there singing happy birthday to me.
Oh, my goodness.
So that made that super, super special to me. And then my favorite marathon out of all of them was Chicago.
Okay.
And people ask me, why Chicago? Yeah. And I tell them, I say, Chicago doesn't do one thing super well. Chicago does everything well.
Yeah.
And from the expo to Grant Park to the course to the police, they won't share their donuts with you, though. They will not share their donuts with you. I was on the course at mile 20. I had seen a cop. He had there were three dozens of donuts boxes, and maybe the first two had already been eaten, but he had just broken open one of them. And I was like, man, let me get a donut. He's like, nah, partner. He's like, you can get a chair. I'll clap for you, but you can't get a donut.
I guess they don't know whether you're diabetic or not. You might be asking for something that's not good for you.
Well, not that. I think that if they give them the one, then everybody going to start coming over, and then they're not going to have any stuff to eat on while they're out there. Chicago does everything well. And then to finish and be at the fountain. Love and marriage, it's an institute. You know, I was like, how, you know, Al the Bundys and stuff to take a
picture. Is that where that
came? Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And so when you finish and you come out the corral, you're at that. That's where
I know where you're talking about. Yeah.
That's where you meet up with everybody.
Okay.
And it's just like, that was like super cool for me.
Huh. I've been to Chicago a couple of times. I've run all over Chicago, but I've never run a race in Chicago. So, I can picture that.
Yeah, you got to do the Chicago Marathon.
Well, you know, in the past, I've never run fall marathons because I was always coaching. I was coaching a cross country team in the fall.
Okay,
and I didn't want to take time away from it's. You know, the time to not only run the race, but the time to train for it. To be serious about it, and. So I never ran a fall marathon.
Oh, okay.
Well, I've stopped coaching now at the high school and the college levels, and so I'm open to running a fall marathon now. So maybe I'll go to Chicago and New York and some of those ones I've never run. I've run Boston a few times, but I'm not a big marathoner.
Yeah.
I enjoy the shorter, faster stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You and I are opposite ends of that spectrum, but yeah. That's just the way I am.
Marathon is the middle of the road for me. Although we come.
So you did over 40 of these races. You weren't able to reach the finish line of all of them, but you learned. It seemed to me in reading the book that there was this transformation from the beginning to the end where I think you overcame some things. You're able, I think, now to handle some of these PTSD issues a little better than you were prior to going on this journey.
Yes.
And a transformation, I think, was the word that you used in the book. So can you talk about that transformation process? And
well, it caused me to face what I was going through, not only with the PTSD, but everything that we've talked to up to this point, and the sleep deprivation, the hallucinations. I got to the point I told my doctor, I started talking back to him. And so the guy that shot me, I would hallucinate of him. And like when I was laying down, I felt somebody staring at me. So I would look and I would see him and, you know, he'd be smiling at me with the gun and stuff. And I told my doctor one day, I said, so I just started talking back to him. He said, did he say anything? I said, no, he just looks at me and smiles. But I had to literally, I didn't know where I was. Sometimes I didn't know if I was between reality or hallucination or fantasy. There were times I'll call my doctors and told them I think they need to have me committed because I'm like, I don't even really know if I'm talking to you. Like, yeah. I was serious with them. I'm like, I don't know if I'm talking to you. I don't know if I'm woke or asleep. I just really don't know.
Yeah.
And to be in that place, it was just, you know, my doctor say, well, they didn't have me committed. It was like, we can treat you without having you committed. You're not a danger to yourself. You're not a danger to anybody else. You know, you're just learning your triggers.
Yeah.
And that's what I had to do. I had to learn my triggers. And then I had to learn how to cope. And then I had to also learn how to use avoidant tactics with triggers that I already know, like cigarette smoke.
Yeah.
It's like my biggest trigger.
Yeah.
And it's still a challenge for me to this day. And so I learned that. So that really transformed the sleep deprivation. That it caused me to have a handle, but not really. I didn't get over it during that time. Matter of fact, I was at a race up in Montana, small race up there. And I remember the bear paw, that's what it is. And they were expecting me. I talked to the ladies and it was their first run they put on. They put on their first run. And you got to remember, I've done a lot of marathons and stuff. That bear paw marathon is A1. I told them there's no way I would have known. Had I not known about running and things and known them and they talked to me, I was like, there's no way that you could tell me this was the first time y'all put on a marathon.
Wow.
They did such an excellent job. And if you love country music, they have country bands playing at the end, which is sweet.
Yeah.
And I love country music. So relaxing.
Do you?
Yes. And so I remember I fell asleep and I hadn't slept in I don't know how long. I slept. And so I didn't wake up to catch the bus to go out to the so they bus you out either the 5K, 10K, half or full, and then you run back in.
Yeah.
And so I didn't get there for the bus, and they were worried about me, wondering where I was. Well, when I finally got up, I ran to the finish line, and they were like, "Hey, we were wondering where you were. We didn't see you at the bus this morning." And I was like, "I was asleep. I finally got some sleep. And man, I had so much energy. Yeah. I was like, let's conquer the world." And so we went. I asked her, I said, "Can I run it backwards?" She said, "Backwards." At first she thought I meant like literally backwards. And I said, "No, I just want to start here and run out and come back."
Yeah.
I'll run out to 13.1 and come back. And she was like, "Yeah, you could do that." She said, "But if you don't make it to the 13th mile," she said, "then when you see this SAG vehicle, you have to come back with it. You got to be in front of it."
Yeah.
And I said, "Okay." Because everything else gets broke down after that.
Right.
And so you're running over there in those valleys and stuff and those mountains. It's so precious out there.
I bet.
And Indian land, the farms. Yeah. And so I turn around with the SAG vehicle. I'm running back in with a lady. And this dog comes along at some point and he runs. He runs like, think about 8 or 9 miles in with me.
Yeah.
And I would stop to get water. He'll stop. They'd try to give him water. And he didn't know he wouldn't get water. So we ran in and going up towards the finish line and a dog like right there with me.
Yeah. And so that's fun.
I let the that's lady cool. go in before me because she was like, I didn't want her to be the last one. You know, because it was her first marathon. And I was like, I'll be the last one. Me and the dog are finished. Go ahead. She's like, "You sure?" She's like, "I don't want to be the very last one."
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. So she went in and then I let her go in and me and the dog stopped. And so that all the hoopla would be about her.
Yeah.
And then I came in afterwards and a dog came in with me, and the lady told me, oh, the dog runs with everybody out there.
That's cool.
Like a lot of the local runners and stuff. Yeah. And he's always running with the dogs. Huh. So when they were breaking everything down, she knew the dog's owner knew the dog. So she tells the dog, time to go back home, go home. And so now he's running back home and he's got to run about 9 miles to get back home.
Wow.
But she knows he's going to go back home.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow.
That's pretty cool.
These farm dogs, they cool.
What a cool story.
I got to go back up there and run with that dog again.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. We'll be back in just a minute with a little bit more.
There is no better way to start the day than in the Word. Our Bible in a Year challenge is a great way to start the day in the Word as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. I also share helpful tips each day along with encouraging quotes. Choose the self-paced challenge so that you can go at your pace. You must be an Upward Running member for access to this exciting challenge. So if you're not a member, sign up today and get started. If you are a member, it is just a click away to get started today.
All right, we're back. And one of the things you just mentioned about being toward the back of the pack. Now, at one point, you were toward the front of the pack, and now you're that guy that you're back there toward the back of the pack. And you know, it's always struck me because you mentioned in the book a couple of times where they're tearing down and finish lines aren't there when you get there and that kind of thing. And I remember us running the Mayberry Marathon in North Carolina. And they had a time limit there. And one of the ladies that was with us, she's a fairly slow runner, but she also started late because she forgot her number. She had to run back to her hotel to go get it and then come back. And so she started late on top of the fact that she was going to be somewhere near that back end anyway. Well, she wound up, of course, being last after the time limit. Though there was a lady there. They took the finish line down. The music guy, all gone. All the spectators, everybody was gone. That lady was going to stay there at that finish line until she got there. She said, I don't care how long it takes. I'm going to hang around here until she finishes so she could hang that medal around her neck. And she did. She hung around. And when she finished, but it struck me at that time, something that I don't know how many people think about this, but those people who finish despite the fact that everything's being torn down, despite the fact the time limit's over and they finish it anyway, I have so much respect for those people.
Yes.
Because it's easy for me. I'm finishing somewhere near the front. People are cheering and there's big crowds and, you know, that's great. But to be out there alone by yourself, finishing that thing up, you got to be pretty driven to do
yes.
that. And I'm just kind of in awe of that kind of thing. And I know that you hang out with those folks a lot in a lot of these races, don't you?
Yes. You know, the road races I used to use for conditioning and to pace other people to help them with their goals, as I would be out on the lonely trails of trail running. But yeah, so I was looking to serve other people, get them to reach their goals. And so I was... Yeah, at the front of the pack, pacing people, people that wanted to qualify for Boston, things of that nature. And at that time, I didn't even know what BQing was.
Yeah.
I thought somebody was talking about Burger Queen or Burger King or barbecuing. But as I've gone through this, I've found that as much as I was serving in the front of the part of the race, I've had to serve twice as much in the back.
Yeah.
And I tell anybody, I've ran the faster paces, and now with what I have to face with, and when I do races, it's a lot harder. It takes a lot longer, more determination, more steps. And I tell people all the time, it's a lot easier to run faster.
Yeah.
It is a lot easier. Take it from somebody
who's been on both ends.
Been on both ends.
Yeah.
It is a lot easier to run faster, especially when you got a bullet in your butt. But yeah, they have some awesome, amazing stories. And, you know, what you're saying isn't unusual. There's the Skidaway Marathon that's in Georgia over there on Skidaway Island.
Yeah.
And that race director, he's awesome. I love how they start their race with prayer. He gives a little devotion. And then they have the worship music. And then it's off to the races.
That's good stuff.
And the biting gnats, yeah, they want to feast on you. But
oh, yeah.
Other than that, once you get going, you're good to go. But he literally does the same thing. He waits to the very end, and then he'll sit up there and he'll go out and run with people back and forth that's struggling to finish yeah. that last little loop and stuff. And I mean, you see that. I've seen it personally throughout a lot of races.
Yeah.
I've seen it personally with race directors or whoever was over the finish line was responsible for the finish line. They were out there with the medals.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing because you never know why. You never know someone's why.
That's right.
You just know that they're there.
That's right.
And I've heard the mean stuff out on the course as well from spectators. And some of it I chalk up to just their ignorance about running.
Sure.
And then the other, I chalk up to all the alcohol they've been drinking out there cheering.
Unfortunately. Yeah.
Unfortunately. Yeah. But I don't think anyone of their right sound mind that is out there seeing someone do something is putting somebody down for walking. Now, there's a lady that speed walks Boston. She qualifies. And the last time I did Boston a couple of years ago, she was being made fun of by some other runners at the start line and cause she walks. And I told her she was about in tears. I said, ma'am, they're jealous. I said, they're jealous of you.
Yeah.
I said, because you can walk faster than they can run.
Yeah.
And I said, there are people like that. I have friends in Houston that walk faster than they run. Yeah. That you literally got to run to keep up with their walk.
Yeah.
And I said, some people are just gifted like that.
That's right.
And I said, you have a tremendous gift. I said, don't let people put you down because you speed walk the course.
Amen. Yeah. Well, one thing I have to bring up are we have a Couch to Marathon group that's going through.
I'll take the couch
right now. they're going through that right now. They're just in the 5K portion of that right now. But they're going to our graduation race for the Couch to Marathon is at Big Beach, the Big Beach Marathon in Gulf Shores, Alabama in 2026. I know that you have done the Big Beach Marathon before.
And, yes.
Maybe you can meet us there, huh?
I'm not going to meet you there. I'm going to beat you there. Listen, those ladies down there at 311 Junction and that whole group, that whole crew of people, the lodge at Gulf Shores, and along with the other hotels, the crowds, that place is wonderful, man. And ever since I started the quest and got connected with 311 Junction and the Big Beach Marathon, they have always been open to me. They've invited me to come inspire, invigorate, and ignite passions in people that enter their races. They just let us know and show up. That's all they tell me. Yeah. And, you know, they're very welcoming, very well organized. I've been at several of their different races, very well organized. And I never met so many people that are on the first name basis with so many runners.
Yeah.
And it just so friendly. Not that nobody else is doing that. Other people are doing it. But it's like everybody that's there, they know personally.
Yeah.
It's like, what grade did you go to school with this person? Yeah. What park did you play with this person? Where did you see this person off at college? And it's like they take every person personally.
Yeah.
And it's such a beautiful thing to be around them, the care that they have. And they don't look not to do something.
Right.
They look to do everything to make your experience.
And Nikki's a little off center too.
Yeah.
That makes her even more fun.
Yeah, it makes her more fun. Nikki is off the chain.
Yeah, yeah.
I told Nikki, I said, you better be careful. I might take you home with me. I don't have no ring on my finger. I need a wife. I like picking with the ladies, but they are awesome, man. And yeah, so I will be down all there, right, because I was supposed to be down there this past year, but I got stuck in all that snow in Pensacola.
That's crazy. Yeah. Which was crazy.
Which was crazy. And then even if I would have made it, I would have had fun, of course. But my books didn't get there to 2 weeks later because of the snow and being held up. So I had the post office just return them to sender.
Yeah.
But yeah, I will be there next year bells and whistles on.
Well, good. That'll be fun. Well, one of the things, I want to leave this for last. One of the things that you said in the book, it really hit me. You said, how many people paraphrase, how many people deny their pain or cover it up? It's kind of what you were getting at. And in society today, I see that it's so true. And it's even worse than that. People that are in pain, emotional or physical, they're not only trying to run away from it and deny what's going on in their own head and their own lives, but they're lashing back out at people that don't think like they do or don't have the same issues they have or whatever. And this online community that we have now where we can say things anonymously back and forth, or they might know a name, but they don't know who you are.
Yes.
Makes people even more bold to say ugly and nasty things about people. And I just see so much of this. People just, I think a lot of that comes from a pain inside of them that they feel like they have to lash out to other people. We see it in politics. Politics is so ugly now. It's yes. just terrible. And I hate it. How do we get past all of that, you think? How do we take all that? Like I said, I think the origin of it is the pain that's inside of them mm-hmm. and the lack of Christ in a lot of cases.
Yes.
But not in every case. Some cases, those people have Christ and still act that way.
Yeah.
How do we get past all that, you think?
Turn everybody into a runner.
All right. I like the idea.
Listen, the running community is so loving. I'll say that. And everything has its moments. I've been around the globe running.
Yeah.
And there is an unspoken respect, a level of trust, and accountability that runners have for their community, that if we had it for our nation, that we would go back to being able to be a party, this party, that party, this party. But after the election is over, we're all American.
That's
it's all about being an American. And that's what it's not about. It's about the parties these days.
Yeah.
And I think the hurt and the pain is the denial and the lashing out is that's the shame that people have for themselves.
Mm.
And it's like, let me attack you before you expose me.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And so we run from our hurt because we're going to be like our foreparents, Adam and Eve. We're going to cover up.
Mm.
And then when confronted, we're going to blame shift. And then we're going to attack.
Yeah.
And for me, like, as much as I've been through, and I had every reason to just attack any and everybody, I was praying, and I was real with God. God, these people did me wrong. It makes me so angry, but I know you say in your word, we're not to sin in our anger.
Right.
They've slandered me. They've done this and that. But you says Romans 12 that we need to pray for those who despitefully use us.
Mm.
Bless those who curse us. Bless and do not curse. To do good unto those who are in the middle of the very act of being evil towards us.
Yep.
That we're to overcome evil with good. And that we're to leave vengeance for you. knowing that we've been caught and that we ourselves will receive a blessing. Let me tell you something. That don't feel good.
No, it's tough, isn't it?
It takes the Holy Spirit.
That's right.
It does not feel good. It does not. It's not something I ran to do.
Yeah.
And like with the sleep deprivation, I told people that's not a badge of honor.
No.
The suffering I went through is not a badge of honor. I don't wish that on anyone. Not even those who did what they did to me. But what I had to do is understand that no matter what happened to me, I always go back to that question that God asked me when I got saved. If you think that you're just to take vengeance on those who've done you wrong, how much more just am I to condemn you to an eternal hell? For I am holy and you are not.
Amen.
That's a stone of remembrance for me.
Yeah.
And so I remember that in the midst of my anger, my pain, my hurt. And so one of the reasons why I go around now speaking, and I was gifted this book. I didn't write this book. The book wrote me. Mm. And I was gifted this book, and I use it to raise funds for charities that mentor kids, especially troubled teens. I use it to raise funds to continue to go around and speak. But the reason I do it, one of the main reasons is because I can't sit down and have a conversation with that young kid that shot me.
Yeah. Wow.
I can't. And I'm angry about that. I wake up some days very angry in the middle of my sleep. Mm. Angry. I just had a nightmare about being shot and I'm angry, but I can't send in my anger. So what am I to do with it?
Yeah.
I go out and I intentionally, that anger that I have, do something about, maybe I can turn one or two or three kids that would do what he did to prevent them from going
turn
down
them
that,
away
route.
From that route. Yeah.
If wow. I can do something to positive, godly. And so that's what I choose to do.
Yeah.
And that's why I go around and I speak. But you have to be intentional. And that's what I love about running. Mm-hmm. You got to be intentional with running.
That's right.
You got to be intentional to get dressed, intentional to put those shoes on, intentional to get prepared with your drinks, your diets. You have to be intentional about losing that weight. You got to be intentional about not making your decision as to whether or not you're going to run before you run, but at the end of your run.
Yeah.
Because I tell people,
that's right,
make a decision about whether you don't want to run when we finish. And if you could look me in the eye and tell me that, boy, I'm glad we didn't run today, I said, then I'll leave you alone.
But nobody ever said.
But nobody's ever said that.
That's right.
Nobody Amen. Ever said. I hate that I went out and did that run. I hate that I went out and did that fartlek workout, you know, that temple run. That, yeah. You don't hear that.
Nope.
You know,
no, you're right.
What you hear is people smiling. You hear their thoughts through their eyes.
Yeah.
Through the way that they stand, the way that they walk, the way that they wear their clothes. It gives you so much.
Yeah.
Running has done so much for me.
Yeah.
And I may not be able to run like I used to run, but I'm still going to run.
Yeah.
I'm going to run for this running community, and I'm going to continue to run for Christ.
Amen. Couldn't have said it better myself. I think that, let's do the checklist here. We need more people running and more people with Christ. We got those two things. We're good, right?
We're great.
We're great.
We're great. Right. Well, yeah, the running would take care of the human side of the puzzle. And Christ would take care of the spiritual.
That's right.
And together, we'll run that race.
Amen.
That endurance, that's with endurance that's been set before us.
Amen.
Yes, yes.
Well, Aaron, I really appreciate you taking all the time to come out here to take your time and effort to get out here to us here in Dalton. And but I've so appreciated it. And it's been great to get to know you a little bit. And man, we love you.
Love you too, bro. And thank you for having me out here. And if I can leave you with a little song, I would say this. One day, like any given Sunday, a fun day. Better heed what my Lord say. Holla, holla, I know that you're hanging, you're banging, you're running with the gangs and you're slanging. You talking about you love sex, orgies, you hitting for an apex, respect. You don't know the concept, you lack, deserve what you get back. Don't know all that you cling to, guess who? Desires to sift you like wheat. The grains on the thrashing floor got more than you ever bargained for. A whore looking for the paper trail. Soul smells just like a living hell. Oh well, you're gonna have to change your ways one day. Today, like any given Sunday, a fun day. Better heed what my Lord say.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And everybody, until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.